Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Roto-World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined by Scott Pianowski as we continue our look at the starting pitcher position. Scott and I went through our starting pitchers ranked 21 through 40 in the last episode. So if you are jumping into this now and want to hear who those pitchers were, make sure you go check that podcast out. Also, Scott and I talked a little bit on that last podcast about just general starting pitcher draft, theories and strategies. So again, that's a good thing to listen to. You can listen to that on the last podcast. We're going to jump into our rankings and discussion a little sooner here. So if you do want that strategy section, go check that out on the last podcast. And Scott, we're getting into the cream of the crop today.
Yeah, I'm excited. This is a group where you're going to want a couple of these guys, maybe three of these guys. They're different roster builds that you can consider. Some people would be fine taking a pitcher in the first or second round. Other people won't do it, but these are, I think you need to have a stance on all these guys, whether you're in, you're out. It depends on the market. And of course, you don't want to go into a draft with a rigid draft strategy. You want to be ready to adjust to opportunities that present themselves. But the bottom line is this, we're going to talk about my 20 and your 20. There's a lot of overlap, but not everybody is the same. And these are pitchers that you spend a lot of time trying to figure out. And the beauty of it, Eric, is that our dear listeners will do all this. And then 3 or 4 weeks into the season, it'll be like you didn't prepare at all because, five or six guys will be hurt. Five or six guys will be having their head handed to them. I think last year, the top 13 pitchers in Yahoo ADP, the top three did really well. And then, there were just landmines all over the place. That's just part of what you get at the position. But it's like the running backs in fantasy football. Yeah, a lot of them are going to get hurt. If you have Christian McCaffrey in the right season, you probably got to your championship game. So it's not apples to apples with fantasy baseball. You play a lot more players. The season's a lot longer. But this is a position you need to get right. Whether you throw your chips in the middle, you want pocket aces, you want early pitchers, or you're more of a draft at a value type of guy, you're going to want some of the guys we talk about today. So hopefully we'll give them some good intel.
I loved your comment right there that you need to have a stance on them one way or another. I think that's really important is, whatever your strategy is, you just need to know what your stance on starting pitching is before you go into the draft. And that could, as we talk about these players, when we get to the rankings, that could be, hey, I know this guy's almost always available in the third round. I'm happy if he's my ace, I'll take him. You did mention how quickly things change. If you've been listening to all of our other position previews, and if you haven't yet, those are on the Roto World Baseball Show feed. So make sure you go back. Scott and I have already hit every single hitter position, and we will end with relief pitchers on the next episode. But you mentioned that there have been a lot of injuries. There have been even more as spring training started. The starting pitcher landscape was already drastically impacted by injuries to guys like Max Scherzer and Jacob deGrom and Sandy Alcantara and Shane McClanahan and Robbie Ray and Brandon Woodruff. And at the beginning of all the other position previews, we've talked about the changing landscape and who changed teams. But I felt like with starting pitching, it was important to just update people on some of the injury news that has happened over the last couple of weeks of spring training. Depending on where you are in your draft prep, you may have missed some of these. And depending on what resources you're using for your draft, you may still see some of these guys high in ADP in the draft software. So it's important to just understand some of the injury news that we have seen. So I'm going to give a brief rundown. And then, Scott, you can jump in and just let me know any of these pitchers who are either going to start late or, come back in the spring or summer, just kind of where you're at on them, if you're willing to draft them or not. The biggest news recently was yesterday it was revealed that Lucas Giolito has a partial tear of his UCL. He's going for a second opinion on Monday. UCL tears tend to lead to Tommy John surgery, so we may see Giolito out for the entire year. As of right now, that is unclear. Shane Baz was already going to have a late start to the year, the Tampa Bay Rays pitcher. He hurt his oblique picking up a weight earlier on, and so he will now be out for at least a month or so, but he wasn't really going to pitch until June in the majors anyway. Kyle Bradish also has a UCL injury. It is not as severe as Lucas Giolito's. He has opted for rest and rehab. And the Orioles suggest that he could be back by the end of May or June. He has already started throwing, you know, flat ground, long toss, not throwing bullpens. Mets starter Kodai Senga has a shoulder capsule injury. The Mets also believe that he'll be back by late May, early June. He's been totally shut down from throwing as of now. Walker Buehler is not even going to make any spring training starts as they kind of, I guess, ease him back in. The thought right now is that Walker Buehler will miss like the first month of the season and then be ready for the Dodgers. Sonny Gray hurt his hamstring the other day. He was slated to be the opening day starter for the Cardinals. He will miss opening day, but the Cardinals believe it's just a minor hamstring strain and he might not miss too many starts at the beginning of the year. Braxton Garrett, who was set to start the year in the Marlins rotation, is delayed because of a shoulder injury. And so he will not make opening day. There's no yet specific timetable on how long he'll be out, but we'll maybe a couple starts. And then Kevin Gausman has general shoulder soreness. He is currently not throwing. They have not yet said if he'll be out at the start of the season, but obviously he's not throwing. He'll need to ramp up. We'll talk about him later because he does appear in both of our top 20s. And the Astros have announced that Justin Verlander will start the year on the IL. He came to camp with a little bit of shoulder soreness. He did not re-injure himself. He's just been slow in kind of like building up to full strength. So the Astros are going to start him on the IL. And then for those of you in deeper leagues, it was just revealed that Luis Medina, who is set to be a starter for the Athletics, has a grade 2 MCL sprain, which will probably put him out for anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks of the regular season. So he will not be there until the summer. So, Scott, any of those guys, despite those the injuries, are you still interested in drafting maybe at a reasonable cost?
A lot to unpack there. There's a lot of guys I can't touch. I mean, Giolito, can't touch him. Bradish, mm-hmm. can't touch him. Senga, who I needed in a keeper league, we decided not to keep him, not to retain him. The one guy in this group, there's actually two guys who I think I have to have a long conversation with you and with other people I respect and decide where I come down on them. With Sonny Gray, and I think we may have mentioned this on the earlier pod, at least it's a hamstring.
Yeah.
Right. Not elbow, not shoulder, not forearm. It's something, and it sounds like it's minor. We know the Cardinals have built such a great defense. You know, a couple of years ago, they won 5 Gold Gloves, and I don't think any of them were bad picks either. Mm-hmm. They always have a plus defense. It's a division I want to attack. I think the AL Central and the NL Central, even with the divisional play, isn't as heavy a slice as it used to be, but I still want to take the pillow landings where they come. I think the NL Central has a lot of those. So Gray, I would still be willing to draft. But I guess see how the market shakes out. This is still fairly new news. Gausman's a really hard call because his upside is Cy Young Award winner. I mean, he was, yeah. I think we both had him as in the top 5 of our rankings, and we'll reveal how far we dropped him. We did keep him in our top 20. But, you know, we talked on Monday about how a lot of times we don't really know where we land on a guy until we draft him or don't draft him. And push is going to come to shove. You're going to be in a draft. And it's going to be really easy for me. Like Kevin Gausman or Luis Castillo, I'm going to take Castillo.
Right.
But how far down that, you know, either or do I go? I am so, Eric, it may be one of my actually flaws as a fantasy analyst and player that sometimes I think I'm a little bit too risk averse. And a lot of these guys, when they have setbacks, I'm like, okay, fine. I won't draft them. Somebody else. Injury optimism, I think, is a pox for fantasy. I think it hurts you. I don't mean I hope this guy is healthy. I don't mean that. I mean this guy's already hurt. Am I going to expect him to be – all the players are going to say, oh, I come back soon. I'm a quick healer. You know, nobody ever said I need more rehab time than the average player. That's never been spoken in any professional sport. I think you have to fade these injury guys almost as a rule. and it's rare for me to talk myself into them. But I got to be open-minded with Gausman to some extent because his upside's so big. And because Gray isn't arm-related, and I like where he landed division, I like where he landed team, maybe Gray. I think I was going to have a lot of Braxton Garrett, and I had to back off that. Mm-hmm. In the case of a lot of these other guys like Giolito and Senga and Bradish, I just can't draft them at all.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. We did talk about Gray on the last episode, so people should listen to that. We're both still in on him at a mild discount from where we were before, just because he could wind up missing. You know, it could be a month before he's fully ready to go, but we think he will be. Bradish and Senga are guys where, like, if they really, really, really fall, which they're not. I mean, somebody's always willing to take them as an injury stash before me. I'm okay. I have doubts about both of them. Bueller, I was iffy on anyway. I didn't think that he had like top 10 upside anymore. And so I was already, he was already kind of like in my 30s, even if he was starting the year full strength. I wasn't really convinced in the strikeout upside. Now that he's also missing a month, I have him down like in the high 60s for me. You have to keep him on your, he will be on the IL. So if you're in an IL spot, or we think he'll be on the IL. So if you're in an IL league, you can keep him stashed. But you're going to have to keep him on the bench for at least a month. Who knows how many innings he's going to get. The Dodgers, you know, aren't going to like run him out, and run him into the ground right after missing all of last year. They have a lot of starters they can mix and match. So, I don't know what his upside is anymore. His fastball performance was dwindling even before he got hurt. The one that's most interesting to me right now is Shane Baz. And what's intriguing here is, We never want players to get hurt. So when I say this injury is a good thing, I don't mean that in that we're happy he's hurt. I mean it from a fantasy manager perspective. Him having this oblique injury means that he's going to start the year on the IL, which means you can put him on your IL. The Rays had said that he was just not going to be in the major leagues until June. So the plan was for him to start the year in the minors, slowly ramp up because he missed all of last year, and then debut over the summer. Now, if you wanted him, that would have meant that you would have had to draft him and keep him on your bench because he couldn't occupy an IL spot. Now you can draft him and put him in an IL spot. And remember that this is a guy that was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball before he got hurt, has really interesting stuff on an organization we know develops pitching well. And there are going to be some spots in that rotation because, you know, Zach Littell is not really a full-time starter. I know they're going to make him one. Taj Bradley has been inconsistent. We know that Springs and Rasmussen are coming back, but probably not till July or August. So, you know, Baz is somebody I'm really interested in, and now this gives me the opportunity to draft him late and throw him on my IL in a league where I have IL spots. And then the consequence of the Lucas Giolito injury is it looks like now both Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock will make the Red Sox rotation. Whitlock has looked really good this spring. He now has two sliders in his pitch mix. He added a sweepier one for swings and misses and a tighter one for strikes. And so I've been really interested in Whitlock. And now that he will likely open the season as a starter, he's going at like pick 350 in drafts. So I really love him as like a, hey, I'm going to draft him and put him on my bench and see if it clicks for him, because we know he's been really talented in the past. And if the worst case scenario is he pitches two or three innings out of the Red Sox bullpen, that can still be a valuable pitcher in deeper formats. But like you, I'm not touching Giolito. I sadly think he's going to be out for the year.
I think we mentioned this on Monday, but on the odd chance that we didn't, the more I think about this Boston rotation, I come up with two takeaways. One, it just depresses me, but I really think Cutter Crawford is going to be the value in this rotation. And I know they want, you know, Bayo to be that guy. He hasn't had a great spring. And I wonder if he's ready really to be there's really no number one here. I mean, it's a staff of 3, 4, and 5 guys. I get that. But if you're going to target anybody in this rotation, I think Crawford's the guy.
I fully agree with you there. There's some other guys that we are going to target, and we're going to go through our top 20. But before we do that, spring training is here. So for those looking to get ahead on the MLB season, grab your Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit NBCSports.com/draftguide and use code BASEBALL 24 to get 10% off at checkout. That's nbcsports.com/draftguide and use code baseball24 to get 10% off at checkout.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So, Scott, we're going in the top 20. We're going to start with 11 through 20. So tell us who your 11 through 20 are.
Number 20 is Grayson Rodriguez, who really put it together in the second half of last year. And looks like maybe he could take a step forward. Remember Baltimore's park with that left field dimension change a few years ago has become a pitcher favoring park. Baltimore's such a fun team too. I'm going to make sure I get to an Oriole game or two this year when they come through Detroit. Joe Ryan at 19 kind of flies a little bit under the radar. He's a strike thrower. He's an accumulation strikeout guy, but I think he's in a safe place. I mentioned that division pillow landings. I'd like to draft a lot of Seattle Mariner pitchers. Logan Gilbert is just one of them. He's my SP 18. Max Fried, I don't really know where to play him. He's had some injuries. He's had some walk issues, but he's obviously a key linchpin of this Atlanta rotation. He's going to be backed by a very good offense. So I have him at 17. Freddie Peralta, strikeout ace, but how deep can he go into games? I'm not really sure that I'm going to draft him proactively, although I feel like he can strike out 12 on any given day. Is Aaron Nola around the plate too much? I think he should be better than he is. He's got a really bad defense behind him. Sometimes I wonder if maybe hitters just dig in and feel comfortable because they know Nola's going to throw strikes. So I have him at SP 15, probably a little bit under the market. I know I'm under the market about Tyler Glasnow, and I think there'll be a discussion about him coming later in this show. Tariq Skubal will be an overweight player for me. I know I'm going to have to fight other people to get him, and I'm willing to do it. I love what he did down the stretch last year. The other big name move that the Dodgers made, obviously Ohtani is part of it, but they add I'm going to screw up his first name, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who was basically winning the Japanese version of the Cy Young every year over in Japan. He comes over at age 25. We're excited about him, but culture change. He's used to pitching every sixth day. The Dodgers are already in the playoffs. How much should they push back from him? I don't think anybody here is going to be throwing 200 innings. Kevin Gausman, really difficult player to rank right now at the moment. Kind of a placeholder rank, starting pitcher 11 for me at the moment.
Yeah, there's so many like really interesting guys in there, and we have similar rankings, some guys in different spots. Aaron Nola for me is 20th. I have Zach Eflin at 19. I think you had Eflin on the last show. For me, it's more just like when Eflin was in the Philly when Eflin was with the Phillies. We said, oh, if only he would throw his changeup more, or, oh, if he went to a team that would get the most out of his talent. Mm-hmm. And then he did both of those things in Tampa and had a great year. And now people are saying, well, it was a career year. He's not going to do that again. And I think we need to make up our mind on who we think Zach Eflin is. Is he the guy that just needed a new organization and a new pitch mix to kind of take him to the next level? Or is he not? Because he added a sweeper. He changed. He elevated the fastball more. Maybe he's not going to maybe win as many games as he did last year. He really kind of had a lot of value from his win totals, but I don't think what he did in terms of, you know, ratios and performance is fluky. I'm super happy to take Eflin inside of my top 20. I have Cole Reagans 18. We will talk about him in a little bit. I have Freddie Peralta 17, just like you. There is some risk in the profile, both injury and non. I do want to say in terms of his injury risk, remember that Freddie Peralta was only a starter for 3 years. He was a reliever at first. So Freddie Peralta has averaged 145 innings per season as a starter. So when you're just looking at his overall innings, It's important to note that as a starter, he still has given us 140, 150 plus innings, which in the current landscape is not really that bad. So we just need to factor that in when we're talking about Peralta and his innings. I have Grayson Rodriguez, 16. I have Bobby Miller, 15. I have Max Fried, 14. I have Tarek Skubal, 13. Tyler Glasnow, 12th. And Logan Webb, I have 11th. So those are the outside. So I guess let's start with the trendiest name on the block here, Cole Reagans. You mentioned him last week. I believe he was between 20 and 25 for you somewhere. What more do you need to see out of Cole Reagans? What will make you a believer, Scott?
Well, I ranked him where I probably won't get him. Even with that great 12 starts he had, his season's hard to reconcile, right? He pitched so poorly for the Rangers that they basically gave up on him. And I realized he was coming off. I think he said two Tommy Johns. Is that right? One Tommy John?
He had one Tommy John, and it was done improperly, or it was not complete. So he considers that he had one and a half Tommy Johns because he basically went back in and had it the first surgery cleaned up.
It's funny because people make that kind of silly joke, kind of inane joke of when they say surgery is successful. Oh, well, when is it not successful? I guess this is maybe one of those cases where they got exactly. to go and fix it. You know, the steak wasn't cooked to my specifications. I need to send it back to the kitchen. But he was unbelievable with the Royals last year, but he still had a walk problem. A little bit lucky with the BABIP. I don't love picking pitchers on bad teams. I know I'm all in on Skubal, but I guess I'm baking in an improvement to the Tigers that I don't feel comfortable. I know the Royals obviously signed Witt to an extension, and they hope that they're going to build something. But I just squint at that team, and I see 68 wins even in a weak division. So we're talking not a lot of starts. Was really bad last year. Before that, part of that, you know, comeback from an injury explained. I don't like the context around him. And I'm afraid I see the walks. I'm afraid maybe this might be a left-handed Dylan Cease.
Ooh, interesting. I don't share your concerns in regards to the control and the command, the Dylan Cease aspect. Also, a little bit of like insider baseball, but I do have a former college teammate who works with the Texas Rangers organization, and I know that they were really high on Reagans when they traded him. They just felt it was a move they needed to make. And so for me, it was nice to hear that like they still actually really valued him. It wasn't somebody that they gave up on. They felt like getting Chapman was crucial.
Couldn't get Chapman for something more inexpensive.
Who knows?
Remember, I grew up on the Red Sox trading Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson. So I know about teams giving up a lot to get a reliever for the pennant race. But
yeah, it's
so hard to find starting pitching, Eric. It just seems to me if they really did like this guy, I'm not saying your source is telling you the wrong info, but I just want to try to find a way to get
I mean, you know, if you remember your middle school days, right? Like is relative. Somebody could like you and maybe not like you. I mean, there's the idea that like they maybe liked Reagans, but you know, they have some interesting pitchers in their farm system. They had, you know, an MLB staff with Montgomery and Scherzer and DeGrom. I mean, I know those guys weren't all fully healthy at that time, but the idea was they felt maybe confident enough in the rotation that it was a player they were willing to let go of.
What I feel triggered. I feel like you just made me relive my whole seventh grade experience. So
I apologize for that. Yeah. Where I am a believer in Reagans is I think it's important to understand that this is a guy with pedigree. It took him a while to reach the majors because, as you mentioned, the injuries and the multiple surgeries on one, you know, injury. But he was a first round pick. There was pedigree there. Clearly the velocity is sticking because he was hitting 101 in the spring this year. So that velocity jump, much like we saw with Skubal last year, that velocity jump appears to be remaining because they're both pushing triple digits in the spring, which means even if their velocity falls a little bit as the year goes on, they're not falling back down to throwing like 93 or 94. You don't go from 101 to 93 on your fastball unless you're hurt. I think that, you know, the slider that Reagans also added last year, I think is a really good pitch. And that was a huge weapon for him against lefties. I do like the two seamer he's adding this year, not as a major difference maker, but in terms of his floor. I just am of the belief that what we saw at the end of last year is legitimate. I don't think he's going to be better this year than he was last year, but I don't think last year was a fluke. And that's where I'm comfortable ranking him there. I also, you seem, and maybe this is the risk averse thing, you also had both Bobby Miller and Grayson Rodriguez outside of your top 20. They were there last week. I'm super high on both of them. There are some drafts where, like, if I wait on starting pitching, and I get pitchers kind of like back to back, like I've started some rotations with Bobby Miller and Cole Reagans, or, you know, Grayson Rodriguez and Zach Eflin, things like that, where I will just get two really quickly. I like both of these guys. Bobby Miller, for me, I have a little bit higher just because I think I trust the full depth of the arsenal. 99 mile per hour fastball with good induced vertical break, which just means it the fastball seems to rise more than others. It gravity brings it down less than other fastballs. So that's IVB is like when you hear a rising fastball, which is just harder for hitters to hit up in the zone, right? It doesn't fall down into the strike zone. I think all of his pitches are really strong. I mean, he has a really good curve and a slider. The changeup was good last year. It also looked good in the spring. I think, you know, he'll miss bats pretty consistently with those. And then the Grayson Rodriguez thing for me is, you know, Grayson Rodriguez was a different pitcher after he was demoted from after he was demoted to the minors in the middle of last year. And I thought that that was a little bit of like a pitcher who everything he was throwing was harder when he got called back up. Everything was 2.5 miles per hour harder. For me, I felt like it was a little bit of a young pitcher who was coming up first big league stint, was trying to be perfect, was trying to make sure that he was hitting his spots. He wasn't really letting it go. He went back to the minors. They had him kind of work on just trusting his arsenal a little bit. He mentioned that he talked about having a conscious plan to be more four seam heavy when he came back up, and just kind of like let it rip a little bit. And over the final 76 and two thirds innings, he had a 2.58 ERA with a 1.10 WHIP, a 24% strikeout rate. I really do like that he went more fastball heavy. I think that was good for him because he throws the pitch up in the zone pretty well. I also really like that he's adding in this two seamer this year because the two seamer will allow him to have a little more diversity from that four seamer. He doesn't really throw the four seamer inside to righties, so the two seamer he can throw inside to righties. I just think this is a young pitcher who was the top pitching prospect in baseball, who, you know, struggled early on, came back up and had legitimately like dominant success over almost 80 innings, who continues to improve himself and is playing on maybe the best team in the AL in a great pitcher's park. And so, you know, I know you have him at 20 and I have him at 16, so it's not a major difference, but I mean, this is somebody who I think is really talented. And I'm happy to get like a back end top 10 starter if I can also get him as my SP2, because to me I'm getting potentially two SP1s, and that's kind of how I feel about Bobby Miller. Like, I really like some of these, you know, if you go by rankings, like top end SP2s, where I'm happy to just take my like 11th starter and 16th starter, and for me I come away ecstatic with that approach.
It underscores how important it is to get a sense of what you can get later in your draft, which helps you determine the decisions you make earlier and how you may hold off on a position because you know there's values you can scoop up later. Now, I want to point out that Rodriguez's current ADP in Yahoo is a starting pitcher 17 and Miller is 23. So if you're in a traditional Yahoo standard league, just know that the market seems to be preferring Rodriguez to Miller, which is obviously how I feel. You know, it's not that Miller can't have a jump in his strikeout rate, but he only struck out 8.6 batters per nine last year, which is just a little bit under code for me. And also, this factors into my Glasnow take and really the whole staff. The story of the Dodgers season last year is how dominant they were, and then they go in the playoffs, and the Braves were the same thing. They were gone in 60 seconds. And I just think that this year, they've tried to do this most years, but I think even more so this year, they've stocked this rotation with all these interesting guys. You know, Otani will pitch next year, and Yamamoto is got a high ceiling, and they added Glasnow, and they added I'm trying to think of the big lefty who used to pitch for Seattle. I can't think of
Paxton.
James Paxton, right? Who they're probably thinking like, yeah, we get 80 innings out of him.
Exactly.
That's their whole staff. If we get 80 innings out of Kershaw, we get 80 innings out of Walker Buehler, right? This team is thinking, Sheehan is dinged up right now, a good young pitcher for them. Mm-hmm. They're trying to be ready for October. And anybody has a tiny little hiccup, and this is really more of my Glasnow take because he's never thrown more than 120 innings, but I think it may apply to Miller too, that they're not going to want to push the envelope on him. Last year, 3.76 ERA, that's fine. I can't draft him in the top 20 based on expecting him to get better, even though he could. But obviously, the fastball is in the high 90s. You know, there's a lot of teams I think he can attack in that division. But I think Rodriguez should go before Miller. I want to mention one other guy really briefly. Both of us, I think, are under market on Aaron Nola. So if you listen to either one of us, you're not going to draft him. What was your case against Nola?
You know, I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but I heard Eno Saris on Rates and Barrels talk about where Nola finished in like the player rater over the last few years. And it was never inside of the top 20. Like Aaron Nola is somebody who we continue to look at as like a really safe and solid pitcher because we know he throws a lot of innings. But he has really kind of vacillated where the years that he has decent strikeout performances, his ERA hasn't been great, or his WHIP hasn't been great. The years where his ERA is solid, like in 2022, is 3.25. Well, his strikeout rate dipped, you know, under 30% that year, so he didn't give you as many strikeouts. Or, you know, I guess obviously also some of this is win totals, right? Him getting only 9 wins in 2021 hurts his overall value. Also, he was pretty bad in 2021. But I found it interesting that like he's never been the pitcher that we want him to be. And then for me, when I broke down his pitch mix and a little bit of what I saw last year, I had some concerns about how hard his four-seamer gets hit. He gives up a lot of hard contact on the four-seamer, which is why he started to use his sinker more. And I think that like that clearly shows to me that Nola has similar concerns about how hard his four-seamer is getting hit. But his curveball has also lost horizontal movement in each of the last 3 years, and the swinging strike rate on his curveball has decreased in each of the last 3 years. So we have a fastball that's getting hit hard that he's trying to mitigate with a new pitch. We have a curveball that seems to be losing shape and swing and miss, and that was kind of his bread and butter pitch. So I just kind of feel like if he can reclaim a little bit, like I don't think last year was necessarily, you know, who he is in terms of that like 4.46 ERA, but I think you might be looking at like a high threes ERA. Maybe he gets to like 3.6-ish. And I don't know that we're getting back to, you know, that like 30% strikeout rate, 29, you know, high 29% strikeout rate we've seen in the past. So if he's a 25-26% strikeout guy with like a 3.70 ERA, like there's some safety there and on a good team, but I just think he lacks the upside of the guys that I ranked ahead of him.
The strongest thing for Nola is he's been so durable and he's been a really reliable strikeout guy. He's had 5 different years with over 200 strikeouts and he just doesn't, he makes 30 starts every year, but 2 of the last 3 years, ERA has been 4.46 and 4.63. I like to say that when ERA and WHIP don't tell the same story, I tend to trust the WHIP, but with Nola, it makes me worried that he's had some gopheritis at times. He had some last year. I don't like the defense behind him. And with the strikeout rate going down, maybe this is the year he strikes out 180 guys, 185 guys. And if you're not getting the 200 strikeouts from him, if we don't think he's going to be an ERA dominator, I don't know. It just makes me, I feel like the market has him slightly overpriced. You don't have to have a major difference to be out on somebody. I know in every room I'm in, somebody takes Aaron Nola a half round to a full round before I'm ready to go there.
I think this also will dovetail into the last pitcher in this section we're going to talk about, which is Tyler Glasnow. But for me, I think people have looked at the starting pitcher market and the question marks of the top guys, right? The fact that they're not the usual top guys we're used to seeing, and they all have, you know, some flaws outside of probably the top four who you and I agree, or top five really who you and I agree on. So people have said, okay, I'm going to take guys that are safer. I'm going to take guys, a lot of these guys aren't throwing a lot of innings anymore, right? The Tyler Glasnow of it all. Tyler Glasnow is going to throw 120, 130 innings. Why do I want that when I could get 190 innings from Aaron Nola? I think we've seen over the last few years, starting pitchers inherently are not safe, right? Yes, some of them are more of an injury risk than others, but starting pitchers are an injury risk. They will always be an injury risk. So I want to make sure that if I'm getting innings out of somebody, that I'm also getting consistent production that I really enjoy, which is why I have Logan Webb 11th. Like, Logan Webb is going to give me really good ratios when he's on the mound. He doesn't have that up and down like Aaron Nola does. So if I'm saying, oh, I'm going to get 180 innings out of Logan Webb, I feel confident that I'm going to get 180 really good innings. But if that volume dries up from a pitcher, if you look at a pitcher and say, I'm going to get 190 innings, that's why I really like him. And then I say to you, okay, if that profile gets 150 innings instead, do you really like that profile? And you say, well, no. Then if the only thing driving your ranking is volume, I would move that guy down a little bit, because volume is not a given. And I think we saw that perfectly with Lucas Giolito. Lucas Giolito had made 30 starts in five straight full seasons. He made 12 starts in the COVID-shortened 2020 season. So basically, Lucas Giolito had been a full-time starter for 6 years in a row, and now got hurt in spring training and is likely going to miss a whole year. The Red Sox signed him, and you can make all your, you know, your criticisms of why the Red Sox signed him, but he was a durable starter. That was the point. He was a workhorse. He was going to pitch deep into games. He was going to give them 170 to 180 innings, and that was his value to them as a real team. And there are pitchers like that who have that value in fantasy, but that could dry up in an instant. So that's why I have Glasnow 12th as well, and that's why I have Nola lower, but that's why I have Glasnow 12th, is I'm just thinking, listen, I know I'm going to get really good innings when he's on the mound. And if that's 120 innings, so be it. But I know the production I'm going to get, and especially if I'm in an IL league, I know that I'll be able to put him on the IL if he's hurt, or pick up somebody off waivers, or whatever. But I trust the quality of the production I'm going to get. And so I will take 120 or 130 innings of that production over hoping that somebody who I don't think is as good throws more innings than Glasnow, which allows them to have more value than Glasnow. The other thing, before I get your thoughts on Glasnow, the other thing is Glasnow did an interview this offseason where he talked about his UCL injury that led to the Tommy John. And he mentioned that it's the same injury that he had in 2019, 2020, and 2021. He said it popped up in 2019, but the MRI came back clean. Then he had the same injury in 2020 and 2021, the same UCL injury. And every time he had an MRI, it came up clean, that there wasn't any major injury. Well, when he finally decided to have surgery, they found that his entire UCL was intact, but it was off the bone. So that's why the MRI kept coming back clean, because there was no actual tear in the UCL itself. It had just fully torn off the bone. So this is a guy that for 3 years was essentially dealing with the same exact injury that he never got surgery to fix, because all of the imaging said there was no need for surgery. Now, I don't think that now that he had surgery, he's going to come back and throw 180 innings. But I do think that that information is important for us to keep in mind and to add context to the 2019 and 2020 seasons, where you may look at it and go, well, he only threw 60 innings in each season, and so he's never been fully healthy. And it's, well, he threw 60 innings because he was dealing with the same injury both years. What if he had had surgery in 2019? We don't really know what that would have meant for his career if he had actually cleaned up the UCL when it first happened. So he threw 120 last year. I really do feel confident in 120 to 130, maybe 130 to 140 this year. I won't go higher than that, but I think 130 seems entirely fair of a guy with a really good performance when he's on the mound.
Well presented, well stated. I'll say the majority of my class now take is really simple. His ADP in Yahoo is the eighth starting pitcher.
Right.
There are people, and some of my colleagues, people I respect and people I'm not comfortable to disagree with. Dalton Deldon, primarily among them.
Yeah.
He's, there are people who, and I look, we're doing the TGFBI right now. I saw Glasnow going in the third round just about everywhere, and to a lot of people I respect. Gene McCaffrey likes him, and Andy Behrens took him in a Yahoo mock we did recently. So he's eighth, the eighth pitcher off the Yahoo board. I have him at 14. You have him at 12. So it's going to be hard to get him where we have him ranked. I just, to me, and you mentioned all the granular stuff about his health and about what they found out and everything. And I would love to, as a baseball fan, Tyler Glasnow, we talk about Eno Saris a lot, who's one of the smartest pitching analysts out there. And he has this stuff plus metric. And basically, Glasnow breaks it because he's just, when he's on, he's one of those guys you see him pitching the first inning, like, he's going to throw a no hitter today. He has three or four pitches that can't be hit. You know, Strider's like that. He has two pitches, I guess. You think of maybe what Pete Darvish used to be, what Verlander was at his peak, stuff like that. And I would love to see him be healthy. But the fact is, if you're going to take him at Yahoo SP8, you're asking him to have a workload he's never had before. And again, the Dodgers are playing for October. If there's any little hiccup, they're going to back off because they just want Tyler Glasnow to pitch against Atlanta in October. They don't want to carry pitches against the Pirates in May or June. That doesn't matter. Or he pitches in a Colorado game or something like that. They are playing the long game. They win the division every year. Baseball has widened the playoffs so much that the Dodgers know they're already in the playoffs. So I don't like drafting somebody which implies significant improvement or significant different shape to their career based on what they've already done. And even though you present a case that maybe Glasnow's ready for that, like 150 inning season, I just can't bet on it.
Yeah, I agree. And I had him like seventh when I first did my rankings. And then I was like, oh, I'm too high. And so if Glasnow does still like 150 innings and has a great year, I'm gonna just feel terrible about myself because
Do you have any shares yet?
I have one share from an early draft and hold where I drafted him as the 11th starter. Mm-hmm. And that for me, like, realistically, I shouldn't have drafted him in a draft and hold. I understand that he's not great in that format, but I also was just like, you know what? Like, I have him ranked so much higher at that point, and I know I'm going to draft so many other starters that as long as he's my only guy with a like injury profile, I talked myself into it. I think I just really wanted to have a share. Sadly, I just don't think I'm going to get him anywhere else because, like you, like I have him just outside the top 10.
You know what? That's a nice player to have at least once. So at least if it's the magical season for him, if it's the Joshua Tree season,
you have the
Nevermind season, you know, whatever album you want to bring up, all my references are old, but if it's that Sergeant Pepper season. Then you're in. You know, sometimes I'll do that. I do that a lot in fantasy football. Like, oh, I'm kind of scared to take this guy because he's got a high ceiling. I'll take him once. So if it happens, that team gets the benefit of it.
You have to understand what leagues you're playing in, right? This is supposed to be fun. If you are playing in leagues that are like super high stakes and really, you know, a huge money over, you know, thousands of dollars entry fee, maybe that's not the league that you pick guys for fun. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a home league or you're doing, you know, a league that isn't a huge buy-in, remember that this is supposed to be fun. You want to have these guys. You want to have guys who you want to have on your team.
I'm so glad you said that.
Diversifying your who you have and knowing if it fits the league, right? You may not want to take that risk in your highest money league, but like if you're in a home league or if you have another league where you want to take some guys you have, you know, you're going to have fun rooting for. Like we do want this to be enjoyable.
I'm so glad you said that. Right before we started this podcast, I submitted a baseball blueprint to my editors. I'm not sure exactly when this week it's coming out. I believe it's coming out this week, although there's going to be some presentation added to it. So maybe it's going to be a few days. But the first thing I mentioned is it's supposed to be fun. And I know fantasy baseball. And I know, look, a lot of people say, hey, you know what's fun is when I win. You know what's fun is when I have a great team. I get that. And if you're more of a hardcore competitive type, maybe you're playing in a big money league or whatever it is, I'm not going to tell you that's wrong, but as I've gotten older, when I first started playing, Eric, I was like, I got to win the league, you know, and I still want to win. I'm still plenty competitive. That's never going to be washed out of me completely, but I'm more of a journey guy now and not a destination guy, and I want to have players I want to follow, and I want to have a team that's going to be part of my life hopefully for 6 months, although we will be overhauling a lot of the roster. We know that's part of fantasy, but I've steered more into, I live in Detroit. I want to have, you know, Scoobles a guy I want to get this year. And if I have to overpay for him a little bit, I'm fine with it. I wrote in this piece, I don't know if it will survive the editing, but there's a guy once who I played in Michigan League, East Coast time, who drafted a bunch of West Coast players because his job was structured in the way that he could only watch the late
games. Watch the night games, yeah.
Yeah, so he always had like the Dodgers and the Padres and the, you know, the San Francisco guys and all that. Because, and his last name was West, which was beautiful. So we used to call him AL West and NL West because all of his players were West Coast players. But he wanted to watch them. And that's what you should do, is that especially your ace or your second pitcher, right? We all know you could never watch your closer. He'll drive you crazy.
No, never.
But if you're drafting some of these guys, you're going to want the baseball package, and you're going to want to watch these. You want, it's appointment television for you every time Tyler Glasnow pitches. So, yeah, for sure, take some guys you want to watch. Take some guys that fit whatever your cable or streaming situation is at home. If you're a hometown fan, if you're an AL fan, NL fan, or if you're more a fan of the league, whatever it is, just line that up so you can, because you're going to spend 6 months with these your best players. So it might as well be guys that you believe in or guys that you like.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Speaking of guys that we believe in, let's get to that top 10. Who are your top 10 starting pitchers for 2024?
Get to that top 10. Framber Valdez, number 10. Houston, a very strong infrastructure. He's a ground ball guy. He's a strikeout guy. I feel good about that. Even though Zach Gallen doesn't have maybe the fastball that some of these other guys have, great off-speed pitches. We saw Arizona maybe a year ahead of schedule. They snuck into the World Series with 83 wins. I could see them adding 4 or 5 wins this year. He's a very safe pick. Logan Webb, I think, is maybe the most unheralded ace. He isn't treated necessarily like one. SP12 and Yahoo ADP. I'll happily take him as a top 8 pitcher. Pablo Lopez went to Minnesota last year, explosion year, strikeouts went through the roof. He's one of several guys, because I'm not going to, as much as I like the top names in this list, I'm not going to probably draft in that tier. So I'm going to have a lot of these Gallons and Webbs, and Pablo Lopez certainly fits that strategy. George Kirby, easy to watch. My starting pitcher 6, always around the strike zone. And really anybody in the Seattle staff, I mentioned Gilbert earlier, that also goes for Luis Castillo. Talk about a horse. Park plays, gets all those Oakland games. Luis Castillo is about as safe a pick as you could make. The top 4 could be, you could mix and match him. I have Corbin Burns 4. I've seen him anywhere from 1 to 4 and everybody's bored. You want to draft him as early as you can. It's fine with me. Baltimore infrastructure is great. The park has become a pitcher park, as you mentioned. Philly's just extended Zach Wheeler. So he's going to be there for a while. He's a horse. He's built like one. He must be a lot of, maybe just a little bit of a poor man's Justin Verlander. I don't think his stuff is as wipeout as Verlander at his peak, but Zach Wheeler's a very safe place to park your money. Gerrit Cole, number 2, Spencer Strider, number 1. I don't think that's the order you have them in, but again, Cole, he makes 32, 33 starts every year. He feels safe at a position where there's really no safety, and who knows, maybe the year that the pitching gods come for him, I don't know. But I, if you want to get that safe anchor, even though I'm not going to take a pitcher probably in the first 2 rounds, I'm not going to say Cole is wrong. And Spencer Strider, heaven help everybody if that third pitch works out, because right now his pitches are striking out the world. And we talked about having fun, right? You got to have some Braves. You got to have some Dodgers. I don't know how you could have a fantasy roster and feel that great about it if you didn't have a few of these guys. Even though my Atlanta collection is more about hoping to get Riley in the 2nd round or Harris in the 3rd round, I may have to make just that one FOMO pick just so Spencer Strider just doesn't strike 180 guys and I have to sit all of it out.
I get that. Yeah. My 10 is Zach Gallen, who, you know, I really like him as you did. I'm a little concerned, and in my most recent update, I think I'm going to move Logan Webb ahead of Zach Gallen. I'm concerned. He threw 244 innings last year, including the postseason. Threw 244 innings last year, including the postseason. Has had arm troubles in the past. This is a big workload. I'm moving him down to 11, so I'm not really holding that against him too much. But I have it worries me a little bit. I moved Gausman down to 9. I was already a little bit out. I had him 7 originally because he gives up a lot of hard contact because he really only has one pitch. The splitter is great, but the fastball isn't particularly good. And so he's a two-pitch pitcher with only one really good pitch. And now he's going to start the year delayed, and we don't know how many starts he'll miss, but I just moved him down a little bit. I have Yoshinobu Yamamoto 8. All the things that you mentioned are totally valid. Where you want to rank him right now is just like your optimism to bet on, you know, his raw stuff, because we haven't seen it against MLB pitching. He's supposed to go 4 innings today, so that'll be nice to see him throw 4 innings in spring today to see kind of like, I don't know who's going to be in the opposing lineup, how many MLB starters will be there, but it gives us another chance to get a good look at him, because on paper, he profiles as one of the best starters in baseball. So it's just, do you bet on what you're going to see on paper, or are you trying to, you want to see it first? I have George Kirby 7 and Pablo Lopez 6, so we flip-flopped them, but I like them a lot. I've been getting them as my aces in a lot of drafts where I tend to wait until like the third round. I take who falls. I have Luis Castillo 5. I had been getting him in a lot of early drafts because Gausman had been going ahead of him. And so Castillo had been falling a little bit. That's no longer going to be the case with Gausman hurt. But I love Castillo. I have Wheeler 4 and Corbin Burns 3. You have them flipped, but we both are pretty much in consensus on them. I do want to point out with Corbin Burns that he changed his slider in the middle of last year and was just like electric after he made that pitch mix change. So you may look at his like full season stats and think, oh, why is this guy like in the top 4? You know, he wasn't really coming off a 3.39, you know, year is fine, but also he had just a 25% strikeout rate. It doesn't look that good. It looks much better when you kind of just do like the second half splits. And it's important also to note that we're not just doing these splits like at random. We're talking about when Corbin Burns made the pitch mix change, there was a big jump, and I'll get those stats in a little bit after I just talk about the top two. I have Strider 2 and Garrett Cole 1. Listen, they're both great. For me, it comes down to, as of now, I'm open to moving Strider to 1 if I see that curveball usage tick up. However, I think that Strider's 3.86 ERA is earned by how much hard contact he gives up. Spencer Strider gives up a ton of hard contact, and it's because he only throws 2 pitches. Now, they're 2 great pitches, but what hitters are able to do is go up there looking for 1 pitch, and they're then either going to swing and miss, or if they get their pitch and they guess right, they hit it really hard. Now, more often than not, they miss and he gets lots of strikeouts. But that's why he gives up so much hard contact, is that he narrows the decision-making for hitters who don't have to look for more than 1 thing. If this curveball, which I was somebody on Twitter told me, I wish I had the name ready, but this is a pitch that he actually threw in college, and so he's bringing it back into his arsenal. If this curveball becomes something that he uses more, because as much as we like that changeup, Strider has said he has no plans to use the changeup more than he currently does. That changeup hovering around 7% usage is great if it also comes with an 8, 9, 10% usage curveball, because now he at least gives some pitchers 4 pitches to think about. That changeup is not going to be that third pitch that he uses for a high enough usage because he's set it, whether we like it or not. So that for me, I just trust the depth of Garrett Cole's arsenal a little bit more, that I think that his floor is a little bit higher than Strider with only 2 pitches. Again, if we see the changeup, curveball a lot more as spring training goes on, then I'm willing to kind of bet back in on Strider. Not bet back in. I have him number two, and I think he's great. But I'm willing to put him ahead of Cole. It's just a matter of that kind of floor for me. I did want to ask you, because people are like iffy on Pablo Lopez, but I feel like we're both bought in. Do you have concerns about? I mean, he had some injuries with the Marlins, but he's been healthy for the past few years. So is this a guy you feel comfortable saying he's my ace?
Oh, absolutely. Most of my drafts, I'm going to look at that Castillo, Kirby, Lopez, Webb tier. Maybe Valdez, we'll get into it. I know you don't like Valdez as much as I do, but
we'll talk.
I feel very comfortable with any of those guys. Could be my top pitcher. Now, maybe if I get to the bottom of that group, although they're all pretty close to me. I mean, I can't say with Logan Webb is my eight. He could be better than Luis Castillo at five. And obviously the final values are going to be a lot different, but I feel like I'm going to go into a draft with like this tier of four or five guys. This is tier drafting is something that a lot of people look at where here are four, five, six, 10, whatever it is, similar players. I want to get one of them. The market may lead me to where I go. Or also, and I'll admit this, I mean, if I took Luis Castillo in one draft, maybe the next draft I'll take George Kirby, mm-hmm. just to diversify a little bit, have something. So if Castillo gets hurt, you know, my season hasn't ended in like five different leagues. I may spread that out a little bit. But I'd like to get one guy in that pocket. I want to say about Yamamoto, when players come over, Japanese import. He's won all these awards. I think he's won their version of the Cy Young, but 3 years running. He's in his mid-20s. I'm more likely to buy those guys in year two when some of the buzz dies down a little bit, when they've had time to acclimate to the culture. And everybody's different. Some players are more ready to live in a different part of the world, and they take in stride. I think it does help him that he goes to a team where he's not expected to be the savior. They already have a Japanese wunderkind in Otani, who's just a unicorn, obviously a wonderful player. Betts is there. Freeman is there. It's such a star-studded team. So it's not like every time he goes to the ballpark, all the cameras and all the microphones are shoved in his face or anything. He can blend in. That's why a lot of players like to play in Los Angeles anyway, because it's not a fishbowl environment. But I'm more of a buy those players in year two when they're not that he won't be coveted next year, you know, health permitting, but I feel like you get a different price, a better price sometimes in that second year. And I just want to underscore what you said about Burns. I love how you described that when we talk about samples and ranges of, okay, over these 10 starts, over these eight starts, in the second half, whatever. And a lot of people will blanch at that, say, oh, arbitrary endpoints. Well, it's not arbitrary if you point to a reason. Okay, they had a different pitch working. Okay, they're working with a different catcher. Okay, they shelved their windup, or they shortened it, or they switched something about their release point, or whatever it is. And I realize our attribution can be difficult, and a lot of times we don't know why something happens and why something doesn't. Sometimes you'll have a pitcher who pitches horrible all year. At the end of the year, he goes, oh, yeah, my elbow was barking since May 1st. I just didn't tell anybody. You know, sometimes we don't know until the end. Sometimes you really can't believe what the message is. Maybe the player isn't telling you the truth. The team isn't telling you the truth. But when we have a set of endpoints that line up with a story that's told or a fact that's given out, that's what I'm willing to believe that stuff. That's when it's not just, oh, let's pick the five, let's cherry pick the five starts that fit my sample. And you make a great case for Roy Burns. You know, this may be, I know he had a little bit of an off year last year. Most of it was front loaded. He's in a better team now. He's in a better park now. So I think it's a great time to get Corbin Burns. Not that I'm breaking anything here, but if you want an ace, but maybe you don't want to pick one in the first round, maybe Corbin Burns is your speed.
Yep. Let's just get to the Framber Valdez conversation. Mm-hmm. Cause I think we're pretty much in agreement on a lot of the top 10. I have Framber Valdez 22nd. I view him more as an SP2.
This is our biggest disagreement.
This is our biggest rankings disagreement. I had this big disagreement also on Potapalooza with Paul Spohr. Paul Spohr also has, I think he had Framber like 11. So for me, it's twofold. First,
so it sounds like Paul and I are right and you're wrong, but let's have the discussion.
Yeah. Okay. it was Paul versus Nick Pollock and I. And so I guess it's Nick and I.
You're Pollock on your own, man. You have to pull the Pollock rank on me. Can we get Eno Saris on the horn and let him break the time?
I actually don't. I'll have to look and see where Eno rank. Eno just did his new rankings. I haven't looked at them. Okay. So here's the things for me. Framber Valdez is primarily a sinker baller. He throws his sinker almost 50% of the time. The sinker gets hit really hard. had a 41% ideal contact rate, which I've talked about on other podcasts, is barrels plus solid contact plus hard ground balls over batted ball events. So it doesn't just add in barrels, because really hard hit ground balls are also bad because they often lead to hits, and hits lead to, you know, runners and et cetera. So that's 36th percentile in all of baseball. So if you're throwing a pitch 50% of the time and it's getting hit that hard, that's not great. His changeup also allowed a 48th percentile ideal contact rate. So that's below average. And then for me, his cutter was great in 2022, but then he threw his cutter differently last year. He threw it almost 3 miles an hour harder than he threw it in 2022, and it missed way more bats. It had a much higher swinging strike rate, but it also posted a 42% ideal contact rate. It had posted a 27% ideal contact rate in 2022. So basically, he got more swings and misses, but that pitch also got hit much, much, much harder. And it got hit much harder, particularly by righties. He had almost a 50% ICR against right-handed hitters with the cutter, which means almost 50% of the contact he gave up on the cutter to righties, who he's going to face more than lefties, was hard contact, was not ideal contact. To me, that's a real problem with a guy who's going to consistently give up hard contact on all of the pitches that he's throwing, except for the curve, which is an elite pitch. The curve is a great pitch. That's the one thing he can always fall back on. But he had a 3.45 ERA last year. Sierra said it should have been closer to like a 3.70. He had a solid whip and, you know, good, you know, strikeout rate, 25% strikeout rate. So there's nothing wrong there. But for me, I just look at that profile and I say, okay, I feel confident saying he's more of like a 3.6 ERA guy. So not a huge drop off from where he was at, but closer to what Sierra says he was, and closer to my comfort level of trusting a pitcher who gives up that much hard contact. So for me, I just say, really solid pitcher on a really good team who won't hurt you, but I'm a little cautious of saying this guy can be my ace because of how hard he gets hit. And so that's kind of where the discrepancy lies for me. I would just rather take the upside of the Bobby Millers, Grayson Rodriguez's of the world, who I think could be legitimate aces, where I just don't see that upside for Framber.
This is where somebody having a track record of being durable and making 31 starts in a season, getting over 200 innings, where I, you know, last 2 years, 198 and 201, where we hope that guys like Miller and Rodriguez are going to be in that area. And so many things that Valdez does, which are very good. He obviously gets the ground balls. I know the ground ball rate took a little bit of a drop last year, but it came from the stratosphere. I mean, he used to be like, just everything was on the ground. And one of the great things about ground balls, even when they're hit hard, the worst they're usually going to be is a single. And a lot of times they're hit right to an infielder to get a double play and you get out of an inning. His whips have consistently been good. His career BABIP is 284. So he's pitched long enough where I think that's his mean to regress to. I think the last 3 years, his BABIPs have all been pretty stable. Last year, he actually bumped up his strikeout rate a little bit, and his fastball ticked up over 95 miles an hour. I feel like last year is probably the worst type of season he could have, mid-3 ERA. He's usually been reasonable with home runs. I don't mind. I get it. Hard contact makes us nervous, right? But when it's hard contact on the ground, that means you need 3 hits usually to score a run. Mm-hmm. I trust that the control is excellent. The strikeouts bumped up last year, and he's on a winning team. I love ground ball pitchers. We all love ground ball pitchers. And he's proven somebody who I think we can project for 30 starts. There aren't that many guys we can say that about. Yeah, that all sure. Up. Is he maybe more? I talked earlier about maybe he could sneak into that group with, you know, with the Lopez's and the Webbs and those guys in the Seattle pitchers. Maybe he belongs below that. Mm-hmm. So I think what might happen a lot for me, Eric, is that, okay, I'm taking hitters. Oh, okay, I got Kirby or Castillo or even Webb. And then I double tap back to Valdez, and now he's my starting pitcher too.
Yeah,
he feels better than most people starting. No, granted, you don't like him as much as I do, but I would love him as my second starting pitcher. I think it's very gettable.
I don't like him as much as you do, but I like that strategy, and I think him in that role makes sense. The only thing I'll add: last year, 7.9% barrel rate allowed, tied for a career high. Last year, 25% fly ball rate allowed was a career high by a good bit, actually. So yes, he is still a ground ball pitcher. He still gave up 54% ground balls last year. However, he's given up a 63. His career is a 63% ground ball rate. So 54% is a big tick down in terms of how many ground balls he's giving up. So to me, that's, we'll see. It's only 1 year, so we don't want to say that's his new level. But it is something to keep an eye on because, as I mentioned, like, he made some pitch mix changes and some velocity changes on some of his pitches. And then as a result, he gets hit harder and gives up more fly balls than he ever has. You have to say, okay, we don't want to say it's definitely because of that, but I think it raises some question of, like, are those two things connected? What version of his pitch mix are we going to get this year, and where will he end up?
I talked about arbitrary endpoints and do you have a reason, which means they're not arbitrary anymore. He was a lot worse in the second half. He was a Cy Young candidate in the first half, 2.51 ERA, a whip of 1.05. Then his ERA was well over 4.66 in the second half. So I wonder if maybe they can iron something out that didn't go right. And I don't have an inkling of what that is, and I'll have to do some deep diving on that. And if I don't find a good answer, maybe I just have him ranked too high and I have to accept that I got to bump him down a tier. But I love a pitcher who, again, ground ball tilt, winning team, and I can project 30 starts. I just feel like there aren't that many guys you can say that about.
For sure. I fully agree with that. Scott and I are going to end the show by giving you some of our prospects or young pitchers of note that we like getting some shares of in drafts. But before we do that, let the madness begin. We are in conference tournament season for college basketball, and Peacock is your exclusive home for Big Ten hoops. Today, on Wednesday, you can start streaming the TIAA Big Ten Women's Tournament. And next week, on the 13th, it's the men's turn to get the action started. So turn to Peacock for your Big Ten college basketball hoops action. So Scott, let's end here by just giving, we talked about some deep league some deep league sleepers, some guys we like in like draft and holds or 15 team leagues on the last episode. So you can go back to that episode, turn to the end to hear that. Let's focus on like some young pitchers, just total kind of like wild card gambles, who you're interested in maybe throwing on your bench late in drafts and seeing what happens.
I should know this. It's Paul Skeens, right? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah,
I don't think he's going to sneak up on anybody. I mean, because he has the draft pedigree and everything. But the Pirates view themselves as quasi-contenders. And I think his ETA is definitely this year. I'm curious to see. The Reds have such a fascinating roster, and we talk so much about the offensive side of it. But I wonder if Rhett Lauder could maybe be a factor for them in the second half of the year. He's somebody who I would love to take in a keeper league. And maybe the Cubs don't push Cade Horton this year, but, man, I think they're the best team in the NL Central. This is somebody I could see making 10 to 12 starts in the second half of the year. I will say in redraft, I generally am not going to be – I'm not going to be the prospect guy. These are players I'm taking in Dynasty. I'm taking in Keeper. I'm taking in leagues that have some retention. And I would probably – you know, I got like Skeens. I would hope to get maybe like an 18th or 20th round, something like that. And I realize some people are going to jump the gun for on sure. that. I feel like Cade Horton is the pitcher I'll probably be most likely to draft in some sort of Keeper league.
Yeah, I do my rankings based on – 12-team league formats. What I like to do in a 12-team league is my bench is almost all guys who have jobs. I'm not all taking like stash guys, but guys who have jobs but have considerable upside but have some question marks to them. And I like coming out of the draft with a few of those guys on my bench, probably more pitchers on my bench than I will inevitably want to keep, because then what I can do in the first few weeks of the season is see who seems to be clicking, who looks good, who I think has some legs, and who maybe doesn't, and then I can flip those starting pitchers off my bench for hitters that every year hitters come out of nowhere in the early part of the season. They get a lineup job that we didn't know. They look better. They, you know, whatever it is that we didn't see in the spring. And so I can make that flip because historically speaking, pitchers who look like they could be studs go for way more fab early in the year than hitters who had like a hot week or two. So I want to draft those pitchers, put them on my bench, and then if they don't look good early on, I can swap them for other people. So the pitchers that I'm drafting who I think have starting jobs who are going late, DL Hall, who's with the Brewers now, he was a really high prospect for the Orioles. He was the centerpiece of the Burns trade. He reshaped his slider last year too. He looks like he's in that rotation. Edward Cabrera for the Marlins has a rotation spot. The big thing for him was command. The command looks really good early in spring. So I'm willing to take an upside gamble on him. Mackenzie Gore for the Nationals. Remember, he was like a top pitching prospect in baseball when he was with the Padres. He's throwing a little harder this spring. And also for me, what I like is he's elevating the fastball more. So he's getting more swings and misses on the fastball. So I like taking gambles with Mackenzie Gore. In deeper formats, Ryan Nelson and Joe Boyle. We talked about Joe Boyle now probably as a starter for the Athletics because Luis Medina's hurt. Boyle is somebody who had really plus stuff, but no idea where the ball was going. He's throwing strikes in spring. He's somebody who I think just has really good raw stuff, and he's going like outside of the top 400 right now. So you're taking like a last round pick. Ryan Nelson has looked good. He is the fifth starter for the Diamondbacks. I like that team context. So again, as my late round pick, I really like that. And then if you are stashing prospects, guys who I think will pitch this year, who I like, you mentioned Skeens on Pittsburgh. I'll just mention Jared Jones, his teammate, who I think will also be up this year. Looks really, really good early for the Pirates. AJ Smith-Shawver looks great for the Braves. He's just 21 years old. I think that he will get a chance to be that kind of fifth starter at some point this year. Cade Horton, I love. You mentioned him. Drew Thorpe was kind of part of the big get along with Michael King for the Padres in that deal with the Yankees for Juan Soto. I think Drew Thorpe gets an opportunity this year. I like Cade Povich, has looked really good for the Orioles. So if Bradish is out for the whole year, which is a possibility given the UCL injury, I think Cade Povich is somebody who could pop in the second half of the year. And then also Christian Scott for the Mets. The Mets rotation is a disaster. Christian Scott will start the year probably in AAA, but he has looked really, really good this spring. And so he's somebody who I wouldn't be shocked if he makes, you know, 15 to 20 starts for the Mets this year. So he's somebody who may not have the upside of some of these other guys, but I love kind of stashing him as well.
I apologize. When I gave my list, I was thinking maybe we wanted guys who weren't in the majors to start. But you mentioned some of the post-hype guys. I'm certainly in on Edwin Cabrera. I think Griffin Canning has a ton of room for growth to beat his ADP. And Mackenzie Gore, it just takes, you know, we always say this, development is not linear. He was obviously a big part of that trade with the Padres. He's very young in his career. Those are the types of guys. Those are perfect late round picks, right? Cabrera just needs to tweak his, if he gets a little bit better command of the strike zone. I mean, we've always known he can miss bats. And I think Griffin Canning has like 175 strikeout season, very much in his range of outcomes. So those are guys I'll be looking at. All upside at the end of your draft. You're not trying to play it safe and find some 4.27 ERA guy. You're finding somebody who, if one thing goes right, all of a sudden you have an unbelievable trade chip, or you have somebody you could trust for the rest of the season.
Yeah, in 12-teamers more than 15, you have to draft expecting you're going to play the waiver wire with your final few spots. So draft for that upside, knowing that there'll be somebody.
Short leash too, man. And you talked about the hitters, right? When a guy comes into a job, forget what you thought. Once you see the playing time as a currency for somebody, you can't wait any longer. You have to jump. I want you to, as much as you may like your bench when you draft, I want you to start ripping it up in April.
Yeah, got to do it. You can't hold on to these guys for too long. We can't get precious. Scott and I are going to be back on the next episode to finish our position previews by talking about relief pitching. And then we'll just be getting into our season content. We might look at some guys who've really kind of impressed us in spring, or, you know, kind of geared towards our season starting. We're also going to do our Roto-World staff mock draft next week. So keep an eye out for that. We're going to kind of do a live stream of it. I'm sure you'll be able to see the board and also kind of hear us talk about them. We'll have some guests on as we talk about the draft as well. You can also follow Scott and I on Twitter and read our work on there. I'm at SamskyNYC. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. And we'll check you on the next episode of the Roto-World Baseball Show.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.